Thank you very much. So we're going to shift gears back to skin and soft tissue infections. These are the results of a phase 2b study conducted by Celsuitics on a novel class of antibiotics known as the HDP mimics, more specifically, in this case, a defensin mimetic. I'd like to acknowledge and thank my co-authors. Also, the disclosures are on this slide as well. First, some background information. I think everyone is aware that MRSA is a global public health problem, and community-acquired MRSA is a growing problem. We certainly have a lot of it in the United States, and from what we've heard here at the conference, over 50% of European physicians are now reporting an increase in community-acquired MRSA. And as you know, it's a major cause of skin and soft tissue infections. It all starts with a rational design through medicinal chemistry techniques. Basically, at the University of Pennsylvania, later at PolyMedics, and now at Celsuitics, we've taken the structure of human host defense proteins. In this case, there's an example called meganin on this slide, and replicated the structure with a peptide axis, a cationic charge on one end, and hydrophobicity on the other end. This defensin mimetic, called brilocidin, is a fully synthetic, small molecule mimetic of host defense proteins. It is not a peptide, it's not a biologic, it's not a peptidomimetic. The rationale in developing these compounds, shown on this slide, basically, as a defensin mimetic or HDP mimetic, we're replicating part of the innate immune system. Of course, the innate immune system patrols the barriers in our bodies, our skin and mucous membranes. They regulate the microbiota, and they have immunomodulatory activities, which link the innate and adaptive immune systems. So indeed, HDP dysfunction has been implicated in inflammatory disorders of the skin and mucosal surfaces, such as inflammatory bowel disease, atopic dermatitis, acne, skin infections, and others. The clinical lead, as I mentioned, is brilocidin. Brilocidin exists really at the center of where these three circles intersect. The upper left-hand side, you will see the properties of what we would expect from an HDP mimic. These are the anti-inflammatory properties, anti-biofilm properties, and indeed, brilocidin, this antibiotic, is now in phase two for the prevention and treatment of oral mucositis in cancer patients. On the upper right-hand side, like a regular antibiotic, it kills pathogens. It's concentration-dependent killing, has a long half-life and post-antibiotic effect. It has sub-MIC activity. And finally, at the bottom, we believe it can help solve instead of add to the resistance problem. We do this in two ways. Obviously, like other drugs, other new antibiotics being presented here, it kills resistant pathogens, and we'll talk about that as we look at the data from this trial. But it's also rapidicidal with a decreased mutation rate, less than the limits of detection, that is less than 1 in 10 to the 11th. As a single dose, we remove noncompliance as a driver for resistance, and it has stationary phase activity, which kills persistent bacteria. So we believe it could be part of the solution for the prevention of resistance as well as a treatment for resistant organisms. The clinical experience with brilocidin is summarized on this slide. Three phase one studies have been completed. They're listed there. Pharmacokinetics show consistent and linear pharmacokinetics in plasma with a half-life of 15 to 23 hours. Ex vivo efficacy was demonstrated in human serum, and it was potent versus MSSA and MRSA. Safety, mild paresthesia and hypoesthesia, numbness and tingling, with acute onset and rapid resolution, was seen in the earlier studies. This is not neurotoxicity. In fact, animal safety studies have been done, nerve conduction studies and others. It's thought to be an ion channel effect. Transient blood pressure elevations were observed in the earlier studies. These were dose-dependent, reversible after treatment discontinuation. The results of a phase 2A study were presented at ICAC in 2012. PK/PD modeling was done around that time. We'll talk more about that. And then today we're talking about the results of a phase 2B study. In that first phase 2A study, in summary, Efficacy was consistent across all treatment groups, but the doses were high, and we believe those high doses given over several days, in that case 5 days of brilocidin therapy, is what contributed to the blood pressure events. There were 6 out of 160 brilocidin-treated patients in that study with a systolic blood pressure of greater than or equal to 180. Basically, we overdosed. So in this study, we are looking at different doses. These doses were selected through PK/PD modeling. You'll see on this slide, there is a low-dose regimen consisting of 0.6 milligrams per kilogram single dose, a medium-dose regimen, 0.8 milligrams per kilogram single dose, and a high-dose regimen, 0.6 milligram per kilogram on day one, 0.3 on day two, and again on day three. Of note, the highest total dose in this study is 1.2 milligrams per kilogram. It's still less than the lowest total dose used in the last study. And you'll see up here that the comparator is, again, daptomycin, given once a day for 7 days at standard 4 milligrams per kilogram dosing. Placebo is given, obviously, to fill out the 7 days for the brilocidin regimens. The assessment visits are given here, day 2 to 3, day 7 to 8, also end of therapy, day 10 to 14, also known as short-term follow-up, and then a phone visit at day 21 to 28. There were 215 patients randomized across four treatment arms, around 50 patients per arm. The definitions of ABSI were given in the FDA guidance of October 2013, and in general, it was greater than or equal to 75 squared centimeters in area with other signs and symptoms. Early clinical assessment at 48 to 72 hours is consistent with the FDA endpoint, and of course, here in Europe, we're looking at slightly later clinical response assessments. Given that a single dose was used and compared to 7 days of daptomycin, we're choosing to show data from both the day 10 to 14 visit and earlier at the day 7 to 8 visit. Here are the study analysis populations. Again, at the early endpoint for FDA, we're focusing on the all treated population, which is also the safety population. And then for the later endpoints for EMA, microbiological ITT population at EOT and at short-term follow-up. The definitions of these populations are at the bottom. For the early clinical response, I think everyone's familiar with this. For the FDA, patients did not receive rescue therapy. They had to be alive and had to have a greater than or equal to 20% reduction in lesion area at the 48 to 72-hour visit. Here are the clinical results. At 48 to 72 hours, for the primary endpoint in the all-treated population, the clinical response in the single-dose 0.6 milligram per kilogram arm was 92.2%, and you can see the range 95, 98, and 93.8% for daptomycin. So across all treatment groups in the 90s, you'll see that even though this study was not statistically powered to show significant differences, we can, at the very least, look at the 95% confidence intervals around the point estimates of clinical success. And as you will see here, all of those confidence intervals overlap, indicating similarity between all four treatment regimens. Moving on to the investigator clinical response at end of therapy and short-term follow-up. This is in the MITT population. At day 7 to 8, end of therapy, and day 10 to 14, short-term follow-up, we again see high efficacy rates across all four treatment groups at both time points and comparable to the active comparator, daptomycin. And again, the 95% confidence intervals overlap. Moving on to investigator clinical response at EOT and short-term follow-up, again, day 7 to 8 and 10 to 14, this time by baseline pathogen. Of course, the number one pathogen isolated in this study was Staph aureus, and you can see the breakdown here by MSSA and MRSA. The first group has only. When you see a plus sign, this indicates co-infection, Staph aureus plus the other indicated organism. For example, in this case, Strep pyogenes. Same thing here under MRSA. Of note, most of the bugs, or microbes, I should say, again, were Staph aureus. There were very few Strep pyogenes, and there were even fewer microbes in these other categories, as you can see here. As far as the brilocidin MICs by baseline pathogen, you can see on this slide, again, almost all the isolates were Staph aureus. The MIC 50 was one, and MIC 90 was one. This is consistent with all our previous data. And you can see it broken down by both MSSA and MRSA. Strep pyogenes for the two isolates tested here, the brilocidin MIC was two. And then you can see the other organisms as well. I just wanted to mention that, of course, we can't show all the data, but clinical endpoints, clinical efficacy was measured at all time points in all analysis populations and with all clinical definitions of response, including the FDA response, the investigator response, and a programmatic response by the sponsor. All of these results were consistent. I will show in summary of these efficacy results these graphs here, which show the mean percent change from baseline in lesion area by study visit, this time using all of the data, day 1 through 7, all of the daily assessment data, also the EOT and short-term follow-up data. And you will see in the ATS population and the MITT, there's a smooth downward curve in terms of the reduction in area of the skin lesion, and more importantly, there's overlap of all of these lines indicating similarity between all treatment regimens. I mentioned earlier PK/PD modeling was done back in 2012, and the results were reported at ECCMID in 2013. We are updating that PK/PD model as we speak. In that model, you can see the predicted efficacy results here for 0.6 and 0.8 back in 2012 and also in the updated model. Those results are consistent across the two models and consistent with the efficacy data that we observed in the recently completed phase 2B trial. Moving on to safety. As you can see, numbness and tingling continues to be the most frequently reported adverse event in using the defensive mimetics. These are transient, mild events, actually less frequent than what was seen in the earlier study as predicted, and even more mild. Again, thought to be an ion channel effect. And if you remove numbness and tingling from the calculation of adverse event rates, you'll see this line here, which is a fairly low rate across all treatment groups. More importantly is the effects on blood pressure. And we're happy to report here, consistent with the predictions in PK/PD modeling, we were able to bring down the frequency and severity of blood pressure events using lower total doses and, in some cases, single doses. As you can see here, there was a protocol definition for an adverse event of hypertension, and it occurred in only two patients in the 0.6 milligram per kilogram single-dose arm. And, in fact, that was less than what was seen in the daptomycin arm. And as we all know, daptomycin is not typically associated with blood pressure elevations. And then you can see the results for the other two brilocidin arms here for these two columns. This slide summarizes serious adverse events. There were six serious adverse events. All of them were in brilocidin dosing arms, as would be predicted because over three-quarters of the patients in the study were on brilocidin. Most importantly, none of these serious adverse events were considered by the investigator to be treatment-related, and none of them were associated with hypertension. In conclusion, for efficacy, brilocidin is a potent anti-staphylococcal compound with high activity versus MRSA. Single dose of brilocidin was effective in a phase 2B ABSI study, regardless of the time points and the definitions and the analysis populations for which efficacy was measured. For safety, single dose was safe. Brilocidin was safe and well tolerated in this phase 2B study. Reduction in total dose decreased the frequency, severity, and duration of adverse events, including those for both blood pressure and for hypoesthesia paresthesia. There were no treatment-related SAEs or hypertension-related SAEs. Overall, brilocidin was safe and effective in two phase 2 studies. It's a convenient single-dose regimen given in 100 cc's of fluid over 1 hour. There are pharmacoeconomic advantages, as you can imagine. Efficacy was comparable to a 7-day regimen in these two studies using a robust comparator, in both cases, daptomycin for 7 days. Brilocidin received QIDP designation in November of 2014 under the GAIN Act. This means eligibility for fast track and priority review in the United States. There's minimal potential, for the development of resistance. It's a novel class with no cross resistance, we believe. It's a novel mechanism of action, which we think confers a fitness disadvantage for bacteria that may strive to evolve mechanisms of resistance. A single dose removes noncompliance as a driver for resistance. And it's immunomodulatory with antibiofilm properties, and these are being investigated in other studies. Phase 3 planning for brilocidin for skin and soft tissue infections is in the planning stages. Thank you very much.
I think we have time for one question from the audience.
Interesting. Thank you very much. Can you allude a little to the pharmacokinetics? Is it only excreted in the skin, or is it excreted to somewhere else?
It's excreted in the bile and the GI mucosa.
Because of time, we're going to have to move on, but thank you very much.